you said let's hit record.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
and then he didn't record.
Yeah, yeah, well, I needed to admonish you for not reading the article first. And I hope you feel properly shamed and ridiculed.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, par for the course.
Yeah. I know what the listeners have come to expect from me.
Set the bar low.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Okay, we're back again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
we do this every week, don't we?
Yes, I know. Some
it's hard to believe.
It's crazy.
On recording days, I wake up. I'm like, oh, we got to do this again. I
have to see those people.
We're like, I got to find a topic. Ugh, why don't we have an intern doing this for us?
I don't know. Yeah. Mm. We need the advertising dollars to start coming in.
Yeah.
We need any dollars to start coming
in. The dollars. We need the dollars.
If you would like to advertise on the Beyond Sunday podcast, sure. We're here for it.
Or if you just want to be an unpaid intern, we'll take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find us some topics. Yeah. Yeah. Either way, we're send in your application.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do we need a separate inbox for the flood of interest that we're about to receive? Or are we good?
We can filter out the junk mail that we currently get at our inbox
Maybe if we just start doing ads, then companies will start sending us money.
Oh, there
fake it till you make it. Yeah. All right, this week's sponsored by McDonald's.
Yeah. Smell those billboard fries.
Right.
Bombas socks, everybody. Bombas. Maybe they'll be like, I guess we signed up for this. If we just send them an invoice.
That's how
a soundbite, right?
Works.
Yeah.
You just tell people that they owe you money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Use promo code Beyond Sunday for save 10%
on Bombas. Yeah.
On Bombas or McDonald's. Bumba. Anything, really.
Bumba.com/Beyond Sunday.
Yes. Okay. That's our code.
Claimed it. Sorry, no.
All right. We got some news. So we got an article here.
Ooh.
And, maybe a bit of a heads up for our main article here.
Okay.
I don't know what direction we're going to go in, but based on the article,
Choose Your Own Adventure podcast.
It may not be most suitable for children's ears.
We're talking about Santa Claus?
Yeah, not Santa Claus. We are not going to be, it's not going to be like, we're not cursing or anything, but we're from the New York Times. I'll give you the
what's the headline?
I'll give you the headline, and you can make a decision from there.
Okay. New York Times already caused some people to say not.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We've already. There goes half our listeners.
Piety and profanity. The raunchy Christians are here,
and they're on this podcast. All right. Here we go.
Yeah, it's not talking about the Beyond Sunday team.
No,
it's
right.
Yes.
They didn't write it about us. Yeah,
we made it big.
Right.
Got to write up in the New York Times.
So the raunchy Christians.
Yes. Yeah. So that's our article. So we'll be talking about that. Yeah, raunchy Christianity. So
we'll still be our normal, fun-loving selves.
Sure, maybe even more so.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Was this article written for us, if not about us?
It cost me $1 or $4 or $40. I'm not sure yet.
How are we not sure?
Well, so, the New York Times said, get this for $1 a week.
Uh-huh.
And I signed up. And then the description of the payment was like
minimum 40
weeks.
Like
you charge you $4 a week up to November something, and I'm like, I don't know what this means,
this is too much.
Yeah.
This is making me feel real good about our upcoming trip to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And the expenses that we're incurring.
Just wait for that first billing cycle.
I can tell you it was intentionally confusing. I can tell you immediately after recording this, I will cancel our subscription to the New York Times.
New York Times and their East Coast
media
elites.
Print off a bunch
elites.
Of articles that we can use later.
Oh, yeah, steal a bunch.
Yeah, I gotta
since
do
you
that.
Paid for it, who knows how much.
Oh, I gifted you this article and neither one of you read it.
Well,
so
we were busy.
You've already been admonished in the opening.
I'm going to go back and read it later.
Yeah, sure.
I was saving it for a special moment.
All right.
That's what you do with gifts, right?
GIFs or GIFs?
My Christmas GIFs under the tree.
All right, our news article, our first news.
Okay.
The news.
Do you guys know cicadas are here?
Yeah, man.
Like, they're coming.
Yeah. It's a big year for cicadas,
huge
right?
Year.
Like, we got, the 20-year cicada and the 50-year reserve cicada and
cicada
some 100-year cicada or
something. So,
I don't know
if you knew.
I don't think it's that
there
many,
are two kinds of cicadas.
There are.
Oh.
One.
I think there's actually more, but there are two that are converging this year.
Yeah. One emerges every 17 years.
Yes.
And one emerges every 13 years.
Yes.
But sometimes it's the same year.
The convergence.
And this is that year.
Yes.
Yes. So cicadas are coming. What are your thoughts on cicadas?
So this happened. I don't know if it was a 13 and 17 year, but there was another cicada convergence when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And they were...
I love that you remember this.
I do, because it was May and it was graduation season. So like every graduation party that you went to, everybody's backyards were covered in cicadas. And so it was like... And when normally you have all your graduation parties outside, everybody was like, guess we're all inside because cicadas had taken over our town.
Wow.
It was weird. But it was also like only in certain sections of the city. Like when you went down into the like a little valley area, like there are cicadas everywhere. And then you went up out of that and it was, you know, kind of normal. And it was very strange.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, Houston has been taken over by caterpillars. Have you seen these fuzzy black caterpillars?
Those fuzzy caterpillars
are everywhere.
They're all over the place.
Yeah. I ran over like seven of them on the way in today.
Those turn into butterflies. And butterflies
moths.
Are good for economy.
Yeah, I took my boys for a
walk. Oh, those are moth caterpillars?
Yes.
Oh.
I took my boys for a walk at the Houston Arboretum, which is really nice. And they were everywhere. Aren't
they supposed to be in the Arboretum? Isn't that like...
Unintentionally
but they're,
in our wagon ran over hundreds of them.
Yes.
Because like, at some point, you had to be like, I have to stop trying to avoid these things. Because
what am I going
to
do?
Like you're running over more swerving to
exactly.
avoid the...
Right. Yeah, like every... few feet there's them crossing this little path, so I mean like
that's
I
what
know,
I say about
I
squirrels on the path.
I did not intentionally
eventually I'm just gonna stop
I did there. Not intentionally step on any of them,
yeah,
but if you got hit by a wheel, you got hit by a wheel. I'm just saying
it is
what it is.
There's four wheels. I can't be responsible for all of those.
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't try that in a court of law when behind your car. There's four wheels on this thing.
As a child, I did like the little cicada shells.
Yes.
Yeah, they're
my
cool.
kids also love the cicada shells.
Yeah.
I think they were really fun to kind of look at and touch and play with.
My daughter probably has four of them in her room right
now
that I just don't know.
At minimum,
there.
Yes.
Yeah.
On her person, probably right. four of them.
Yes. One in her pocket. Yes. Probably half of one in her hair somewhere.
Yes. Cicadas are so noisy in South Carolina County that residents are calling the police.
Oh, it's South Carolina County.
Okay. Is it?
Newberry.
Newberry County. That's near Columbia.
Yep.
There's a Lutheran college there.
Yeah, maybe. Are they calling the police? Yeah.
Probably.
Sensitive Sally's.
Residents are calling the sheriff's office asking why they can hear sirens or a loud roar from the cicadas.
I don't know why you would confuse cicadas for sirens.
I
get.
I
guess if there's a lot of them, it can be pretty loud, right?
Yeah, it can be very loud,
but it
doesn't sound like a siren.
I feel like maybe they've never spent like a spring in the South before.
Or maybe they don't know what sirens sound like.
Yeah. Or you've just had like a very sheltered life.
There are, according to this AP News, trillions of these cicadas.
Ooh.
That is a lot.
That's
a big number.
I don't know how many zeros
that's
go with trillions. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cicadas. That you might as well say bajillions. Yeah. I mean, that's just so high. I don't even know what it means. Yeah,
it's a Zoinks response. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Their collective songs can be as loud as jet engines.
Wow. Okay.
And scientists who study them often wear earmuffs to protect their hearing.
Wow.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
It's this is just like the amazing thing about sound, right? You have like such a tiny thing that on its own is like whatever, but
kind of annoying, yeah.
But like you put all that together, and it gets because like if you put, I don't know, it doesn't feel like if you put that many people together and tried to make that, I don't know, trillions of people, then maybe it would be different, right? But you put a lot of people in a stadium, like it's still not as loud as a jet engine,
right?
Like it's really loud, but it's not like this is crazy to me.
I don't know. The last time I went to a Rockets game to see the Spurs play, the guy next to me may have been allowed. As a judge.
Yeah,
he was so freaking loud. It was so annoying.
Was he a Rockets fan?
Yes.
Was that why he was annoying to you?
No. He was just screaming. It was awful. I had to move. Like, it was so awful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah. So,
I'm sorry.
You're on blast.
Yeah, stranger, Rockets fan.
Stranger at a Rockets, drunk stranger at a Rockets game screaming with your buddy.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, like we're in the upper section and he's like screaming at every free throw when they would miss.
Oh my gosh.
He would claim credit.
Right. Oh,
like,
that's
obviously
that's the best, yeah.
The professional athlete. Some jerk screaming from 30 meters away.
Yeah.
That's what made you miss the shot.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I want to complain about somebody too.
Oh, who are we going?
I went to a Bill Nye speech recently.
Are we complaining about Bill Nye?
No, not complaining about Bill Nye. He's great.
He's
but
amazing.
The girl that sat next to me at this it's quiet, right? It's in a nice theater venue.
Ooh, okay.
He's speaking. We're listening to him. She got there late, first of all, so she climbed over
strike
me and
number
sat
one.
Down. And every the entire time she would go, mm-hmm. The whole time he was speaking, and
that's
I was about to come out of my seat and strangle her.
That's like a person who says, that's so funny. everything that's right.
Oh, no, you're hilarious.
Just laugh.
Right.
If you think it's funny, laugh. Right. Yeah.
All right. What are you going to do about these cicadas besides call the police?
I'm not going to do anything about
them. Here's from health.osu.edu.
I'm gonna ignore them. They're going to be dead in 2 weeks.
Right.
And that is eat them.
Oh, yeah.
Eat the cicadas.
Yeah? Good source of protein. Yeah?
Good source of protein.
Okay.
Are you going out and eating the cicadas?
No, not me personally.
Not you.
I don't have trillions of cicadas in my backyard. That'd be very ineffective. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Would you eat a cicada?
I've eaten one before. They're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I'm very resistant to this idea that like our future food is going to be bugs because that's the best we can do. Like, no, give me anything but the bug food long term, please.
Like, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of science is pointing to like bugs as a.
I'll take public transportation. I don't want to eat a bug hamburger, like
because yeah. Bugs are high in protein, yeah.
Right?
Relative, no, and easy to raise
and low in calories.
Yeah,
disagree.
Low
but they're
saturated
bugs.
Fat.
But they're bugs.
They're bugs. Like, and there's too much. I have a whole soapbox about this. There's too much like. Social, not baggage, but too much that goes into our cuisine for us as humans. You know, there's too much like history and like it's the way we come together over our food. Like, you're not going to convince all 6 billion of us to start eating bugs at once.
Nah, but when half of us die off and whatever's coming,
then we don't have to eat bugs. That's great.
Well, maybe
solution.
Bugs are the only thing that's left.
Well, here you go. Cicadas. Are their most juicy tender just out of the shell?
Oh, there you go.
God.
The like tough lobster? Exoskeleton is not very tasty.
No,
so
you don't want to eat that.
You got to watch them climb up a tree, begin to molt from their outer shell. When they're out of their
and then you get them.
Shell, gently grab their soft bodies, blanch them in boiling water for a minute, and then you got to place them in the freezer before prepping them to cook.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't.
For a cicada, yeah, come on. Like, I'm not doing that. Like,
yeah, I'm hungry right. Now.
Yeah,
I don't have to go out there and.
And then you look like the freak that has a freezer full of bugs. Like.
They're related to shrimp, crawfish, lobsters, or other arthropods. If you're eating those, you're one step away from trying skins. Yeah, I like shrimp too. Out of that list, I like.
Yeah,
shrimp.
There's just one small detail is that they taste way better
shrimp,
than cicadas.
Yeah. So here's in the article: what do they taste like? They do have a nutty, nice crunch when sautéed in olive oil with a few seasonings. So. Tempted to say like chicken, so
I could see like if I got cicadas and they like got ground up and like
you would want to eat them like you know plop one in the mouth.
I don't think I would just like want to. Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to like cut into one, right? But like if it was like ground up in like a cicada broth or something like
a cicada broth. Yeah,
yeah.
I've like had them sort of as a novelty before in like queso. Like
of all the places,
I know, yeah. Right? And I've had like ants and grasshoppers as well. And
also in the queso.
I've eaten bugs as well as kind of a delicacy.
Right. And it's fine. They're fine. I would not say they're good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They certainly, like, you know, it's not like a meat. It's like there's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like.
You're not fooling anybody.
Like hairy crunchy about it.
Even in this article, it does say, like, you got to add some seasoning.
They're not good on their own.
Salt sucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Salt,
Old Bay. Old Bay is what they recommend.
Yeah, sure. If it's in the shrimp.
Old Bay seasoning.
If it's in the shrimp family, yeah, I can see it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could do it like
have a little low country boil and just sub in the cicadas and see who notices.
A book by R. Scott Frothingham.
That's
R. Scott Frothingham.
That's not real.
Cooking with Cicadas.
Oh, boy.
I don't want the cicada to cook
with me. Do you think that man dates?
Unless you have snacks, meals, and desserts all in this one book.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
There's no way.
Cicada
no way R. Scott Frothingham of Cooking with Cicadas has a life partner. I'm just throwing that out.
You can got some names like cicada frittata.
Nope.
Sure.
Pasta a la cicada.
Okay, you can do better than that.
Cicada curry, cicada tacos, cicada pad thai.
You can't just put cicada in the name. You
caramel
be more
cicada crunch.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm not into this. Save it. I don't want those cicadas. I'm calling the cops.
You're right.
I'm calling the
That's
cops.
That's what I'm
not by their
for.
Noise, but if you serve me cicadas,
right. I've been wronged.
Here we are. Main story.
Okay.
Piety and profanity. The raunchy Christians are here.
Here.
In this room.
You're right.
You know, you're not too far from that. By Ruth Graham.
Okay.
Ruth Graham is based in Dallas and writes about religion, faith, and values.
Oh, let's go
cool.
Get her.
Yeah. Our friend Ruth.
Right up the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take the show on the road to go interview.
Call
Ruth.
Her in.
Yeah.
Ruth, come on down and join us.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question because this will kind of get into this.
Love it.
When you were a child.
Putting myself
think
in the
way
mental state.
Back.
When you thought of famous Christians.
Yes.
Contemporaries.
Okay, not Jesus.
Not Jesus, not Martin Luther.
Okay, all right, yeah.
who did you envision? Like, who are the famous Christians?
Billy Graham.
Billy Graham. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Who else you got?
C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis. All right.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
junior
or senior?
Junior. Yeah.
Probably out of all those, Billy Graham is the only contemporary when you were a child, because Martin Luther King Jr. and C.S. Lewis were both dead at that point.
C.S. Lewis was dead, yeah.
Yeah. Don't blame that on me.
Contemporary, yes. I was given like within the century. All right.
Yeah. You know, I'd also throw in Ned Flanders.
Who?
Okay, yeah, Ned Flanders, yeah.
So character on The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. So we're not necessarily thinking like, thinking like real people, but like.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right.
Well, in that case, like. Leave It to Beaver's dad.
Those were not contemporaries of you as a child in the 90s.
The TV I was watching.
Was Leave It to Beaver's dad particularly pious?
I think they prayed every night, didn't they? At, like bedtime.
I'm
and
sure.
They got in trouble about something.
I think everybody
and...
prayed in the 1950s on TV, right?
Yeah.
Prayed and then they lit up a Marlboro and
then beat their wife and went to bed.
That was the episode. There you go.
Charmed time.
All right.
Yeah.
So who are...
Oh, Mother Teresa.
Okay.
Who are she's contemporary. Yeah,
yeah, she
would have been alive.
She was legit.
Good alive ones. And well.
Yeah.
Who would be
the Pope?
The famous evangelicals of today.
Famous evangelicals of today.
Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell.
Yeah. Jr.
What's his face down the street? Joel Osteen.
Joel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not even sure evangelical even applies, but you know.
Well, famous and Christian is applied. I mean, people call him Christian.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good
Trump's
list.
Got a Bible out.
Does.
Trump has a Bible.
Yeah.
We got a Trump Bible. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. You weren't here for that episode. Yeah.
You missed out on the fun.
You missed out on the Trump Bible. Yeah. Yeah.
We're never speaking of it again.
When I think of the kind of, public figures in Washington, you talk most about their faith and related to policy, maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lauren Boebert.
Who?
Yeah. The other one.
The other one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two of them.
There's several.
What's interesting, though, when you think about the two lists that we compiled,
okay,
of Christians, you know, from our childhood to Christians today, there's a distinct difference between the two, right? Like the famous Christians of our childhood were, well, maybe kind of nerdy, maybe kind of dorks, for contemporary sake, you know, but had a level of piety attached to them.
Sure.
When you think of Jerry Falwell Jr. or Mark Driscoll, Marjorie Green, Lauren Boebert, or even, you know, Donald Trump with his Bible, you don't necessarily think
piety is not what's coming
piety,
to mind.
Piety, and you don't necessarily think like wholesome values kind of attached to them. Like Ned Flanders, Billy Graham have a wholesomeness attached to it, you know, but these don't.
Yeah.
And honest part of the charm, and I'm using charm in quotes, is their lack of wholesomeness is kind of their, what the article here, their profanity and the raunchiness kind of attached to it.
Yeah, well, Mark Driscoll, you know, as he kind of rose to fame in the 2000s, right? That was kind of like his stamp, was that he was
he's
pastor.
He's the swearing pastor.
Yeah.
He was willing to swear. He was willing to like talk tough and, you know, let men be men and whatever other, you know, stupid stuff that mean. But like that was the cultural shift that was happening that drew people in a way that like Billy Graham was not, right? And or not anymore, right? And
All right. We'll kind of get into maybe some of the whys here in a bit.
Sure.
All right. So let's start with our article here. The article starts talking about a calendar, the Conservative Dads, Real Women of America.
Yikes.
2024 pinup calendar. Do you own this calendar?
I do not.
See, I think mine got lost in the mail.
I'm sorry. I want to say the name. Conservative Dads, Real Women of America 2024 pinup calendar.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot going on with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is a real woman of America as per the Conservative Dads?
And probably white.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're just like in floor length dresses? Like what do we...
No.
Oh, okay.
The calendar features old school images of sexiness. Bikinis, red sports car, bubble bath.
Red sports car, bubble bath.
Red sports car,
Don't you put your red sports car into a bubble
bath? Yeah. Do you want the car in the bubble bath or the bubble bath in the car? That's the question. Yeah.
I want my bubble bath inside a car.
I think bubble bath in the car is the way to go.
If I have to pick one.
Yeah, there's not even a woman in the picture. It's just a bubble bath inside a car.
Right. Ooh.
Check out that bubble bath.
Right.
You know, the models are influencers, aspiring politicians familiar with the very online pro-Trump right. We had a Blaze TV host in a short skirt.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a conservative thing.
Okay.
You know? Wait, so these are political hopefuls that are posing for this calendar?
They're influencers.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the TV host is, you know, short skirt, lighting a copy of the New York Times on fire with a cigar.
Nice.
Maybe she did not like their online subscription model.
Yeah, she's like, you charged me $40.
She was paying $1 a week, and it was going to be charged $1, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, it's $1 a week, but we're going to charge you for 4 weeks at once.
Yeah.
This is published by a woke free beer company, of course.
Woke free beer. I didn't know that my beer had wokeness in it.
What?
I don't know what kind of beer. Maybe it does. What beer do you drink?
Probably does. It's craft beer, so it probably has wokeness in it. If there's a beer that has wokeness, it's the craft beer. It's,
yeah, 100%. Yeah. An IPA.
Yeah. Ruth Graham says...
The ultimate woke.
Right. You know, the counter was launched to provoke liberals, but, you know, liberals don't seem to care much about it.
That's surprising.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I'm shocked.
But it did spark a debate amongst the right.
That sounds attractive. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
What are they debating about?
Well, should conservative dads who happen to be Christians, mm-hmm. should they reject the calendar on moral grounds?
Stand against this.
Or embrace
outrage.
It Ooh. As an irreverent win for the good guys?
Oh, okay.
So this is...
I don't like either of those options.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I would probably say a calendar of scantily clad women in your, you know, your den, your office, your man cave, whatever.
Yeah.
I think is a little weird.
I do think. And I think it stands against this idea, you know, if we're talking to our faith, right, that we're called to realize that subjugation of anybody, right, is tantamount to adultery, according to Jesus, right? That if you've objectified this person in your heart, you've already committed adultery with them, right? So, I think we have to be aware of Jesus's teaching in that, but... I'm not sure that Jesus' teaching is the focus of this woke beer company, not woke beer company's calendar.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Yeah.
No. But in it, you know, in kind of this debate on is this okay for the conservative Christian male out there to have a calendar with, and it'll kind of give them some examples. Riley Gaines, former college swimmer and activist against transgender women's participation in women's sports, who frequently speaks at church events and evangelical conference and frames her cause as a spiritual battle.
Mm.
And she's the cover model in her bikini. So, I mean, and so it just, again, it feels like, do you need to pick a lane, right? If you want to be cover model in a bikini.
Go be a cover model.
Go be a cover model in the bikini. I don't, you know, look, there's plenty of models out there. They do their thing.
Yeah.
If you want to speak at church events and evangelical conferences and frame your cause as a spiritual battle, maybe don't be a cover model in a bikini.
It's tough, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how to say this without getting myself into trouble. So please
from
feel
whom?
I'm not entirely sure, but I'm sure that I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, I'll jump in real quick and say that there's sort of a conversation ongoing right now. I don't know if either one of you are familiar with the trad wife movement.
Sure.
Yeah.
I am.
Trad wife?
Yeah.
Is this like traditional one?
Yeah. Okay, and so it's sort of this movement, this cultural thing that's happening right now where women are like, you know what? We don't need feminism. What we need is to work more in the kitchen and listen to our husbands. And, you know, it's, you know, I'm not probably doing that movement justice. I'll admit that. But there's that. And it kind of goes hand in hand with this idea that maybe not fully educated, but well-meaning women have always been sort of the best champion of the patriarchy.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll group myself in with this just for sake of conversation. We sort of accidentally push things that are against our own best interests as a part of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe there's a little bit of that going on here.
Sure.
I think it's always kind of a delicate conversation about like sexualized images of women, right?
Yeah.
Especially women that are not just models, that are also speakers or entertainers or whatever. Like it's like, I don't think anybody would think twice about like a men's like firefighter calendar for calls or whatever. We wouldn't be like, oh, that's so objectifying and gross. But we do that when it's women.
I would say if it was like Matt Gaetz or somebody else like that in a calendar, I would think that was gross. I'm just going to go ahead and be on record. That would be...
Obviously, we've kind of the pendulum has swung a little bit the other way in that like women are more, it's more socially acceptable for a woman to like objectify men than it is reverse currently.
Yeah. So I think that there's a little bit of that Madonna whore paradox, right? It's that for women, you can either be one or the other, but you cannot have any nuance, right? But for men, you can take your shirt off and oil up for a calendar, but you can also be taken seriously and be a good father and, you know, whatever.
Sure. Well, I think in this, like, you know, our Riley Gaines and whomever the other women who are in this calendar, you know, are kind of like standing on the shoulders of like feminist movement where they can speak, you know, at evangelical conferences and churches while wanting a return to kind of a 1950s fake sentimentality
that didn't actually exist.
Yeah. But like the idea of like, well, you know, our conservative values, but those don't apply to me being able to speak in front of a church. Like it always like this little bit of twofold. All right. So she's going to, Ruth Graham is going to say, you know, such a debate about like, is this calendar okay for Christian dads would have been unimaginable at the turn of the century when the best known evangelical Christians in America were the evangelists, Billy Graham, George W. Bush, and Ned Flanders. So we got two out of the three.
Yeah, George Bush. Forgot.
Yeah. All right.
Would not have called him an evangelist, but okay.
Yeah, but now we've kind of embraced kind of a raunchier Christianity is kind of what, or like a segment of Christians have embraced a raunchier Christianity. All right. So, you know, she will kind of connect this to Donald Trump.
And, surprise.
Yeah. And I don't want to necessarily get into a ton of this because we've talked about President Trump plenty of times on this podcast. We don't need to rehash a lot of things, you know, but she does kind of admit like it's hard to remain fiercely loyal to a figure like Mr. Trump without being changed by him. And I would definitely say that. So the evangelical right. And last week, you know, we kind of admitted like probably his biggest base are evangelicals who don't go to church, but who still cling to the title evangelical. And so that, but that is seeped into evangelicals who do go to church, right? Like, and maybe that's why there's a debate about this at all. Like, why do we have this conservative dads, real women of America calendar being marketed to conservative dads, but many conservative dads are like church going dads.
But it probably starts with the evangelicals who are not church going dads.
All right. So she kind of does this thing like Nancy Mace, a Republican representative from South Carolina, she joked about premarital sex and cohabitation, once obvious taboos from the lectern at a Christian prayer breakfast in Washington. You know, joking that, you know, she was in bed with her fiancé that morning. Her fiancé wanted to pull her back in bed, but she had to rush out to get to this conference to speak to this tonight. And she added, at her speak at the Washington prayer breakfast, "He can wait. I'll see him later tonight." Wink.
Oh, boy.
Yuck.
I have, like, it's not even about like the cohabitation or premarital part. That's just way too much information for people at a conference. Like, I don't, I don't want
at any conference, let alone a prayer breakfast, right?
Nancy.
So, I mean, this is like, So, you know, we may not have the same feelings about cohabitation, premarital sex, or what this means for an adult woman to be with her adult fiance and they live together as kind of the evangelical right. But it is kind of this oddness, right? Like, all my life from the evangelical right, I have heard these things are wrong.
And sex does not exist.
And so, and to hear it now framed as like in a joking way from the pulpit, you know, at a prayer breakfast, and this would not cause a firestorm amongst the evangelical right. When all I've heard all my life is that
this should,
is that a deep, you know, a sexualization of America has has decreased its values and corrupted its children. And here we are at our prayer breakfast. We're allowed to kind of wink at this because she's one of ours. And like, that's that's the reality. Like, I think, you know, we talk about tribalism a lot on the podcast and its issues, but like, that's really, you know, if you're one of ours, we can, the sexual taboos don't matter quite as much. Especially because it's not LGBTQ sexual taboos. All right, what do we think?
You know, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of things about the piety of the early 90s that needed to be torn down.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot of good ways in which Christians across the board, right, evangelical, mainline, whatever you might be, right, have come to a better place of being able to express themselves more fully, right? So, you know, even simple things like what I as a pastor wear, right? Like I'm not collared up every day because society doesn't treat me a particular way. Just because I have a collar on in the same way that they might have 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of those shifts are really helpful.
Yep.
What I see in this sort of situation is how that can swing too far. And it's not, again, right, it's not that this is inherently like, oh, well, her choices are bad and her choices should be punished. It's we haven't had the conversation to establish why we're now okay with this and we're making light of something that is still a really serious thing, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's right or wrong, it's an important and valuable thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
However we feel about, and you know, we'll use sex because that's what's here, right? However we feel about sex and when it should occur and between whom it should occur, it is a valuable gift that should be treasured, not just like winked and nudged at a prayer breakfast. Like that just doesn't seem...
Yeah.
It seems like we're making light of something that's supposed to be this really valuable gift. And we're doing it to try to score political points,
sure.
With an audience that we know will laugh because in some ways, I think, because they are now getting to imagine this person doing this thing and that is perhaps attractive or helpful for them. I don't know. Like, but that, like, why else would you make that joke except to know that other people are going to get to think about that? And that feels like an abuse of the gift to me.
Yeah. You know, she kind of highlights like that early 90s purity culture where even like, you know, cursing.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, like, are we allowed to say crap? Is that a curse word?
Sucks is a bad word.
It sucks.
Yeah. Enjoy your life of crime.
Right. Yeah. Like we got like these things that like now like wuss. Is that bad? Like, you know, is that an okay thing to say? And kind of these, you know, social structures, you know, like we're kind of, you know, toeing the line with those types of ideas. But now, you know, highlighting Mark Driscoll, we mentioned before, a certain amount of vulgarity is not just tolerated, but required.
Yeah.
As a form of truth telling worthy of prophets. Like, right? Like, now it's your, not only is a vulgarity in speech and language okay on the Christian right, but like,
mm-hmm.
it's embraced.
Yeah.
Like, especially when it's used as a weapon against those you disagree
right.
with.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's like, using curse words was wrong, but calling LGBTQ community slander is right.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've often kind of heard that a lot of people on the left engage in something, you know, called virtue signaling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that is like, we want to appear virtuous without actually being virtuous.
Mm-hmm.
Like we want to show like, look how great we are, how much we love, you know, the LGBTQ community, how much we love minorities, how much we love the immigrant, without actually doing anything substantial with our life, mm-hmm. right? Like,
right.
And so, like, a company with putting out like a here, look at our pride themed bag of Lay's potato chips, but actually not doing anything.
Yeah,
that's just virtue signaling, and I think it's wrong. Like, I think that's weird.
Yeah,
I think on the right we've kind of countered that with not virtue signaling, but vice signaling.
Mm.
Like, we've got to kind of embrace like a little bit of like vulgarity, a little bit of raunchiness, a little bit of mean-spirited jokes, and whoever is kind of the most vulgar, the most mean, the most raunchy is getting the attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess like a kid in school, hey, all attention is good attention, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
negative attention is just fine with me as long as I'm getting attention. And so like I think we just have seen that as kind of amongst these people, they're claiming these evangelical values without actually having to live out evangelical values.
Yeah.
And that makes it, I don't know, just really disheartening.
Yeah. There is a place for us to have a serious conversation about how we express what has historically been called vulgarity, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, let's take, you know, crap and language and stuff like that, right? I don't know about you all, but I was definitely told, like, we don't say those words because the commandments say, don't take the Lord's name in vain, right?
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Those words have nothing to do with the Lord's name.
Right.
And, you know, what we said is, culturally, we don't think those words are appropriate, and so we're going to attach them to this thing that's in the Bible, and so this is why you shouldn't say them.
Mm-hmm.
But crap is not God's name, right? And you right. know, however you want to phrase it, the F word, whatever, none of those are God's name, right? Now, we might not want to use them in polite conversation
right.
because we've decided that it's not polite conversation. Just like me sitting here and calling you a bunch of names is not polite conversation, but it's not because of God's command for mm-hmm. us, right?
Yeah.
In the same way, I think there's a lot of healthier ways that we can have conversations about the realities of relationships and sex and things like that that we don't have because we think it's a taboo and attached to these things that God allegedly said, that God's not actually talking about that, right?
Yep.
I think there are better ways that we can have those conversations.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't think a podium at the prayer breakfast
yeah,
is the
place
to
start
do that.
Joking about it. Yeah.
And so, right, I think what this does, and you know, this vice signaling, as you called it, Patrick, I think it's a helpful term, right? I think this actually prevents us from having the actual conversation.
Yeah.
It prevents us from actually being able to say, what does God want for us in this place? In the same way that, like, just screaming about LGBTQ being of the devil or whatever, right, prevents us from having the real conversation of how do we love these people the way Jesus loves these people, right? Both of these
sure.
things draw us into these poles in which we can't have the real conversation of how to experience God in the midst of the gifts that we have in this place.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Engaging in kind of the greatest commandment of loving God
yeah.
and, you know, and loving your neighbor is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And it requires massive amounts of internal change in you and maybe change within our church communities
yeah.
and our family communities. But using our our online platforms and our
mm-hmm,
comments
mm-hmm.
or our speech to denigrate and kind of humiliate those on the opposite end or
mm-hmm.
like cast judgment on them is far easier.
Yeah.
And I think it feels like I'm Christian without actually having to be Christian, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feels
yeah.
like I'm a warrior for God by being the most raunchy and vulgar or mean towards that group of people without actually having to actually
yeah.
challenge myself
sure.
with the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus said.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just much harder. Yeah, I read a thing today that was really interesting to me that was like, if Christians reject, or if the world rejects like the church's teachings on Jesus because they're rejecting the message of the gospel in Jesus, that is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But if they reject the church's teachings because they feel the church is rejecting its teaching
yeah.
on Jesus,
mm-hmm.
that's a catastrophe.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And part of that is the idea of like, for years, the idea, you know, sometimes the church is on the right saying like, you're going to hell for these sexual sins. And then now those sexual sins are happening within the churches on the right. And they're like, yeah, but not us.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
thank you.
Yeah, but it's okay when we do it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then that really, like, it just neuters every bit of the message of the gospel of Jesus, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
if it's like, we're using the message of God as a sword against you and a shield for me.
Are you laughing at neuters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a great word choice for that.
Yeah.
Neuters it.
Yeah. I think that's yeah. really helpful. I think too, right? And when we look at this in the grandeur of time, right? This is a pendulum that has swung back and forth throughout
yes.
history, right? Like this sort of thing within the context of the church was what led to the monastic movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
To people
yeah.
removing themselves from Christianity and saying, we're going to go live this isolated lifestyle because this is the only way to have a true Christianity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that a similar thing is what happened in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, right? That we pulled back and said, okay, we're going to have this super conservative return to moral values. And now we're kind of swinging out of that. And yeah. So again, we've talked about this before. God's church will always have a path forward. I don't think this is advancing God's church in the way they
yeah.
think it is.
Agreed.
It's not going to kill God's church.
No.
Because God's church is always going to stand. But this is maybe not advancing it the way they think it is.
It may kill a
westernized
version of God's
sure.
church.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
not the church. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, she ends with a great title here called Wholesome Lust.
Ooh.
Okay.
Section, yeah. All right.
You know it's a New York Times article when we have section headings throughout.
Yeah,
it
does section headings.
This is
yes.
great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
how
yeah.
organized.
Yeah, yeah.
Cohesive thoughts and sentences, yeah.
She kind of acknowledges, in that kind of purity culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, that all of us were at least kind of a minimum raised in. I was a teenager in the 90s, so I think I was definitely hurt a lot. I mean, you know, y'all are a little bit
toes,
younger than
dabbled.
Me.
Yeah, so, it was still around in the early 2000s. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you were in South Carolina. It was,
so,
you know, they're a couple years behind.
The early 2000s are basically the early 90s.
We're a decade behind.
Like cicadas, purity culture comes out every 17 or 13 years, and sometimes...
sometimes it overlaps.
Yeah. And sometimes it overlaps, yes. Trillions of purity culture is coming out in South Carolina. Yeah. But in that kind of discussion, you know, about like the idea of lust is the acknowledgement that it's a sin, but it's just part of the male condition.
Right. God. But not the female condition.
Not the female condition.
I hate so much about this.
Yes.
I
know. So it's an acknowledgement of like, this is a sin, but it's part of who you are.
Oh.
And yeah. You know, like
and
that,
it's the female responsibility
yes.
to make sure it doesn't happen for anybody.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure. So in that backdrop, a calendar like this is acknowledging like, hey, this is part of that condition. Dudes are going to dude. And the alternative on the left is non-traditional gender and sexual identities, LGBTQ, you know, a greater acceptance and rise of LGBTQ issues on the left. And so heterosexual lust
is fine.
Is yeah. kind of better, right? Like
yeah.
for the people that are like, this is, I'd rather our kids have a calendar like this that they're looking at with these political commentators and things like that than question their gender identity or their sexuality, right? Like wholesome lust. This is the lust that's part of who you should be.
Is this lady, our author, is she advocating this wholesome lust, or she's just laying out this is the kind of argument behind it?
I think she's laying out that this is kind of like
okay.
how she sees this.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I can support that this is how she sees it. I hate everything about this. The notion that lust is just part of the male condition is like whether or not it's true. It's just a ridiculous excuse to say, like, well, we can't do anything about it, right? Because historically, humans have been violent, right? You know, we were created in a way in which we grew up in tribal systems that warred against one another, and we've learned to put that aside so I don't wake up and want to fight my neighbor every day, right?
Right.
We can be in control of our minds and actions, and men need to be responsible for our own minds and actions. It is not up to women to determine how we... should do that, right? And we need to stop saying, well, oh, well, that's just my condition. That's ridiculous to me in part one. Part two, it's the same argument that was used against homosexuality for years.
Yes.
Right? That it's a sin.
You have to fight against
your condition, right?
Yes.
And so now we're saying, oh, and this is the same thing that we said earlier on, but with us, it's inside, it's okay now. And this, it's... I'm so angry about this right now that I'm not even forming coherent thoughts because this is just outrageous to me.
Ruth Graham is not arguing in favor of this. She's like painting a, like, this is kind of like a point of view and this is what it looks like, you know. So she kind of shares like, in a moment in which some Christians feel the world has become dangerously unbalanced, piety can be framed as wokeness and breaking taboos as bravery. And so even in like hanging a calendar of conservative women in bikinis on your wall is a brave act fighting against wokeness in this world. And she says, like, kind of against the backdrop of transgender identities, that it's a wholesome thing for a boy to be lusting after a very sexy woman. You know, like...
Oh, my God.
So, and again, you know, this is a point of view, right?
It might be a natural part of being 13. That doesn't make it wholesome, right?
Yes. There's
a
lot
of
right, like, yeah.
But again, she's saying against the backdrop of that, because then it's at least heteronormative. It's embracing a heteronormative point of view. Yeah.
Yeah, this is all just nasty.
Yeah.
And I completely understand where she's coming from, like laying out like this is the perspective.
Yeah.
And so this is not me attacking or having any problem with what she is arguing. It is a problem with the stance that exists in the world.
Yes.
To say like, this is better than loving people who happen to be gay, who do not lust after others, and who treat one another with love and respect and raise their children to treat others with love and respect. That's gross because they happen to be gay. Mm-hmm. But over here, my 13-year-old can lust over whoever, and that's great.
Yeah. As long as it's a heteronormative.
Because they're heteronormative. Right. Yeah. Sorry,
and she's
not
Republican.
Yeah. You can lust over a female Republican. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not lusting after one of those Hollywood liberals.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, Scarlett Johansson is a liberal. You can't do that. Riley Gaines speaks about spiritual battle of transgender swimming.
So. Yeah. So lust away,
it's
Billy.
It's okay to look at her in a bikini. Yeah. Yeah. All right. What do we think? Is the rise... are raunchy Christians here? You know, is this a thing?
Well, I mean, apparently it is a thing. I didn't know that this was a thing, but apparently...
we have to be mad about it for the rest of the day.
Yeah. No, I'll say this. I think that, the movement that she's tracing, I think, is an accurate reflection of what we're seeing, particularly in the evangelical community, right?
Yeah.
I think that we have seen a move away from a particularly strict piety across the board. I think that the evangelical movement has taken that further, right? So, again, even within the Lutheran church, I think that a lot of Lutheran congregations are less, quote-unquote, pious than we were 20 or 30 years ago. You know, fewer high liturgical churches, fewer kind of practices that trace their roots back to that thing. But I don't think most of us go to the point of having bikini calendars hanging in our offices. I don't.
Is there a pastor's calendar that we don't know about?
Yikes. I pray to God that does not exist.
Mr. May.
I don't want to be in it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, at the very least in the LCA, we can have men and women in the calendar.
We can.
You know,
so, right. So. Yeah. Equal opportunity.
That's a perk.
Equal opportunity calendar. You know, most of the conservative branches, you know, only men. Yeah. No, that's right. Only dudes. I mean, I guess, you know,
if they're pastors, yeah.
If they're pastors, yeah. I mean, you might have to go. Not elders, but...
Sunday school teachers,
yeah.
Yikes, this is getting weird. I don't...
Shit, yep.
No. Mm-mm.
Church secretaries.
It started weird, to be fair.
It's gotten worse.
Yeah.
So all that to say, like, I think the movement towards a lower understanding of piety is accurate and in some ways healthy. I think that's okay because piety can become... Right.
Sure.
Piety can become that same thing that we talked about Jesus rails against hypocrites in the Sermon on the Mount, right? That you're doing this thing for the sake of the thing rather than for the relationship. And so that can be healthy. I think that this evangelical movement that we're seeing has swung past that and turned it into something that is as destructive, if not more destructive, than the piety itself.
Right.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting. The massive swing from kind of a purity culture in the 90s, early 2000s to... conservative dads, real women of America, pinup calendar on the wall.
Yeah. You know, like, except that purity culture is still probably being pushed against that dad's daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the dad is spending his time in his den looking at this calendar and his 13-year-old daughter is still being told, cover up because men might look at you. Right? Like you're the idiot who's looking at her. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm pounding on tables and I've got to stop doing that because that's not good for our microphones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be a thing, and it's going to be a thing for a bit. I think we're going to have to live in this pendulum swing for a bit as a nation and as a culture before I hope evangelical brother and sisters come back to their senses. I mean, like, in fairness, they're saying the same thing probably about the progressive liberals about like, you know, their embrace of, you know, deconstruction of faith and you know, LGBTQ issues and in some ways a liberalization of like who Jesus is and what the message of the gospel is. Like I can, you know, and some of that I might agree. Usually the back part, the liberalization of the who Jesus is and the, you know, and what faith looks like. But I think we're going to be living in kind of a world where the swearing pastor is going to get attention. And not that pastors can't swear. And I think it's perfectly fine and appropriate for pastors to swear sometimes, but the vice signaling of look at us. We don't have to play by our own rules because to do so would be woke is going to be a thing for a bit. And I hope it doesn't burn it all down with it. Like you know, I just don't see good things coming out of this.
I do not anticipate going on a profanity swing in my sermon anytime.
not from
soon.
The pulpit, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I use profanity. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I'm aware that, like, there are places where it's appropriate and places where it's not. And that's okay. Like, that doesn't. I don't
understand why that makes me woke. Like, I know that somebody's going to tell me that that makes me woke, but I don't think that's what this should be about. Like, I don't think understanding that there are appropriate times for things and there are inappropriate times for things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are ways in which my words help people and hurt people, and using words appropriately, like, that doesn't make me woke. And then, yeah.
All right. There you go.
Am I done yelling at the microphone
yet? I think
yet?
You're done yelling.
Okay. Somebody else has got to do the outro. I'm so angry. We got an email. I don't know. Send us stuff. It's,
yeah. It's fine. One, apply to be our intern. Two, give us your your ads.
Yeah. So if you want to advertise.
What's our rate?
It's our rate? Yeah. I don't know. Let's start at $5 an ad.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
So if you want to advertise for $5 or if you want to be our intern for no dollars, you can send us.
I'll tell you what, intern, we'll give you 25% of all ad revenue.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
We have a portrait of a very feminine looking Jesus that could be yours at the end of the summer.
That's true.
This too could be yours, but you can find, or you can email that all to us.
We will not get
podcast.
You your own conservative dad rule women of America.
No, right. Yeah.
BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. Find all our episodes at BeyondSundayPodcast.com, where again, you will not find this calendar or links to it or anything of the nature.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.